Carolyn is completing her master's at Dalhousie University in musicology. Her thesis is A Girl Called Dusty with the Sound of Motown, Dusty Springfield, Mimesis, and Genealogy of Persona. She will, this fall, be entering University of Buffalo's musicology PhD program. And again, she informed me that, again, it is topical, that given the choice between the pastimes of Toronto's Mayor Rob Ford and archival research, she has an entirely laudable and reasonable preference for the latter, which is only, again, which is a sign of a true scholar. And for those of you who don't know, although it's been a world media event, Toronto's mayor at the moment is embroiled in a controversy where he may or may not have these looking crap. So again, this is, you know, it's a good sign, and it fits well for not only your scholarly career, but probably your personal life, if that is your choice. So her paper is There's Always Something to Remind Me, and this is the International Labor Laws, Work Permits, and How Government Shaped the British Invasion.
In January of 2012, I gave a lecture about the women of the British invasion. While I was preparing the lecture, something caught my attention. Sandy Shaw's 1964 single, There's Always Something There to Remind Me, was number one on the charts in the UK, number one on the charts in Canada, and number 52 on the Billboard's Hot 100. The first logical explanation I could formulate was that Canada might have gotten British television programming, thus was able to drum up a good amount of publicity. But then I found a New Musical Express article dated April 9th, 1965, titled Sandy in Canada, and another from April 23rd with the headline Another U.S. Ban on Sandy Shaw, with an article that explained her inability to obtain American work visa. Other articles stated that Sandy Shaw, Twinkle, and Wayne Fontana all had trouble obtaining visas to perform in the United States. While these articles shaped my proposal for this paper, the subsequent research has complicated my argument. For starters, Sandy Shaw, Twinkle, and Wayne Fontana were all able to perform on American's television show Shindig. In fact, Sandy Shaw performed in 6 episodes, and both Twinkle and Wayne Fontana performed in 1 episode. Billboard magazine has further complicated my analysis. A report of Wayne Fontana's struggle states that though he was leading the Billboard charts with his number one single, Game of Love, he was not able to obtain an H-1 visa, which I'll define in a moment. He was able to obtain an H-2 visa, but was limited to television appearances and could not perform in live venues. My confusion is caused in part by the ways in which the performer's value is determined. The visas in question are non-immigrant work visas that are granted to temporary alien workers who are not seeking citizenship, otherwise known as the H-1 and H-2 visas. The H-1 visa is awarded to foreign workers of distinguished merit and ability. The H-2 visa is awarded to foreign workers who can fulfill a unique service that an American can't provide. The most important aspect of the Immigration and Nationality Act is that of the involvement of unions such as the American Federation of Musicians and the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. The American Labor Union appointed the Musicians Union to determine whether or not a musician is of distinguished merit and ability. In March of 1964, the American Federation of Musicians and the British Musicians Union agreed to allow an exchange of uniquely talented musicians who were valuable to the culture of society. In an effort to get the American Department of Labor to enforce this agreement and ultimately shut out all foreign rock musicians, the Musicians Union claimed that American rock musicians could play the same music as British musicians, the assumption being that rock and roll was simple. At its inception, the goal of the Immigration and Nationality Act was to protect jobs of American musicians. But in 1964, pressure from the Musicians Union forced the Department of Labor to try to ban British rock musicians, including the Beatles. While it was a vendetta against rock and roll musicians, part of the Immigration Nationality Act enforces a quota of foreign workers. The quotas were country specific, meaning that only certain number of visas could be granted to applicants from the UK. I highly doubt, however, that this is an accurate excuse for the attempted ban on British musicians, and the decision for individual musicians or bands were sporadic. The Animals, for instance, were able to perform at the Paramount Theater in New York City in September of 1964, but when they were ready to go on stage at Harlem's Apollo Theater in January of 1965, they were told that they were not allowed to perform. The most famous case of the ban on British musicians is, of course, the attempted ban of the Beatles. But they are not, however, the best example to use to truly analyze the situation, because it is probable that their massive popularity made it impossible for the unions to prevent them from performing in the United States. Sandy Shaw's case, however, is worth analyzing on the account of her massive worldwide chart success that she enjoyed in many countries and in many languages, but not in the United States.
I walk along the city streets you used to walk along with me. Ich bin allein und kann nicht glauben, dass es ihn für mich nicht gibt. Ed è così diverso, perché io guardavo il mondo con i suoi occhi.
According to the New Musical Express article, Sandy Shaw made several attempts at obtaining the H-1 visa but failed each time. During my research for this paper, I was lucky enough to find the visa petition decision, which explains in detail why she was denied a visa to perform on Hullabaloo and the Al Hurt television show. The language used in this decision report reveals some insightful aspects of the mentality of the unions. First, the way in which her age is referenced suggests that there is a sense of ageism by referring to her as an 18-year-old beneficiary, and following that by stating that she was unknown 1 year prior indicates an association between age, stature, and ability. The entertainment unions were clearly clueless about how pop culture worked. In the pop music industry, youth worked to the advantages of the performers, as exemplified through the popularity of Herman's Hermits, fronted by a then 17-year-old Peter Noon. Most musicians of the British Invasion were in their late teens or early 20s, and they did not require long-standing prior success in order to gain international popularity. In 1936 discussions that developed the Immigration and Nationality Act, how to define merit and ability was heavily negotiated. At one point during the formation of the act, someone suggested that a person of distinguished merit and ability would have to have a performance career of more than 10 years. If the 10-year minimum was left in the approved act, the British Invasion by law could have been spearheaded by none other than Petula Clark, who had been in the show business since she was a child, and performers such as Sandy Shaw and Cilla Black wouldn't have stood a chance. The mention of Sandy Shaw's salary in the petition decision raises another problem. It is stated that a performer of distinguished merit and ability would be paid more than $750 and that a first-class plane ticket from London, England to New York City would exhaust her funds. This statement suggests that distinguished performers would travel by nothing less than first class. Determining a performer's potential by their means of travel is a limiting perspective. She did not have this problem with European countries, where she was in high demand. She was in such high demand in Italy that the owner of a nightclub assumed he could get her to perform at his club during her tour. She didn't have any prior arrangements, and though he made a generous offer, she declined. He was so set on booking her to perform that he even had ads for the prospective concert posted around town. His irrational reaction resulted in the Italian police raiding her room, and while enthusiastically singing the Italian language version of her song, Girl Don't Come, they waltzed around the hotel room, stealing all of her money and clothing. Having just returned from the beach, she and her band had to perform that night's concert in their swimsuits. After the last four shows of the tour, they hid their earnings from the police so they could manage to pay to get back to England. I highly doubt that this would happen to someone who lacks distinguished merit and ability, and I would argue that high demand is a more accurate way to judge someone's worth. Another excuse provided by the district director exposes his position on the value of the popular music industry. While the fact that Sandy Shaw had a hit recording is stated several times, a quote used from a Time magazine article trivializes that accomplishment by suggesting that pop stars usually have brief success and thus are not of distinguished merit and ability. The Time magazine article, like the district director states, is a comprehensive overview of rock and roll, but he unsurprisingly cherry-picked from the article in an effort to solidify his decision. A good portion of the magazine article focuses on the adult reception of rock and roll, saying that more than 40% of the teen beat records sold in the United States are bought by adults over the age of 20, and that many sponsors of rock and roll television programs are for mom-oriented products. In addition, the article describes the social dynamic of popular culture in saying that people who damn rock and roll are labeled square. Connecting rock and roll to people of distinguished merit and ability, the article lists important people who like to dance the frug, Bobby Kennedy included. The tone of the Time magazine article that the district director chose to reference is the antithesis of the position that the Musicians Union and the Department of Labor took on rock and roll. It appears as though the American Federation of Radio and Television Artists was predicting that Sandy Shaw would be a one-hit wonder and that she would soon be irrelevant in the popular music industry. Little did they know, just 2 years later, she would go on to become the winner of the Eurovision Song Contest in 1967, a competition in which most European countries compete. At the time, the Eurovision contest was presented with dignity, and winning a competition in front of all of Europe is indicative of an ability to which the U.S. government officials were clearly blind. The way in which the singer and composer Anthony Newley's case was handled is in stark contrast to Sandy Shaw's case. On June 30th, 1965, a visa petition was approved by the district director to allow Newley to perform on the television show Password. The two-page document, rather than Sandy Shaw's five pages, states that Newley is such a renowned entertainer that his reputation alone establishes that he is of distinguished merit and ability. It also states that, because of his reputation, it is not necessary to get an advisory opinion from related organizations. In addition to the assessment of his fame, the district director states that the television show Password only provides panelists of distinguished merit and ability as an effort to succeed in a competitive market. In this document, an elitist attitude and standpoint are used to celebrate a worthy beneficiary. In Sandy Shaw's document, an elitist attitude and standpoint are used to degrade and trivialize her abilities that were completely lost on the people who reviewed her visa petition. Through popular music discourse, the British Invasion has become synonymous with the male-dominated Merseybeat sound. Bands such as The Beatles, Jerry and the Pacemakers, and Herman's Hermits are all iconic fixtures in this moment of popular music history. While there were dozens of Merseybeat rock bands, there were very few women from the UK who had US chart success, and there are even fewer whose importance hasn't faded with time. Mainly Petula Clark, Dusty Springfield, Lulu, Cilla Black, and Marianne Faithfull. Because of this, it would seem that there was a shortage of British female talent during the mid-60s, but that is not entirely true. Kiki D, for example, didn't have chart success until her 1976 duet with Elton John, Don't Go Breakin' My Heart. But her recording career began in 1963 at the age of 16. Her talent was recognized and enlisted by Dusty Springfield, who hired her as a backing singer. As a perfectionist trying to achieve a very specific sound, Dusty Springfield would not have hired an untalented singer. In fact, Dusty Springfield was invested in Kiki D's career enough to provide backing vocals on some of Kiki D's recording, notably the 1966 song, Why Don't I Run Away From You? It is true that in this video, Kiki D looks like she's playing the role of Dusty Springfield's stunt double, which, of course, could be a hindrance during a superficial visa petition assessment. But her talent and potential should have placed her among the other so-called Brit girls. Had women got more publicity and were taken more seriously as musicians, lesser-known talent could have gained more exposure and the British invasion would have had more diversity. In a climate with bands who, to the untrained ear of union reps and government officials, all sound the same, there should be some anxiety about individuality among the musicians in question. If musicians were being denied work visas due to their lack of unique ability, it was important for musicians to differentiate themselves from one another. Freddie Garrity from Freddie and the Dreamers, for example, has said that his band's performance style was so strange because they needed to find a way to be unique. As a musicologist who studies popular music, I can tell the difference between the Mersey Beat bands, and I can pick up on each band's nuances that separate one from another. But for members of the American Federation of Musicians, who primarily concerned themselves with jazz and classical music, it could be challenging to assess how each band is different. Couple that with the Department of Labor's agenda to ban the British invasion artists, and individuality becomes crucial. What Freddie Garrity was referring to is the dance called the Freddie. It originated from Freddie and the Dreamers' stylized performance practice and ultimately set them apart from the rest of the Mersey Beat bands. When I first heard the song, I'm Telling You Now, I was surprised that it wasn't Jerry and the Pacemakers. And when I first saw a video of them performing the song, my assumptions about their image and presence were completely changed.
How do you do what you do to me? I wish I knew. If I knew how you do it to me, I'd do it to you.
Sandy Shaw wasn't the only female pop singer whose importance and ability were taken into question. In May of 1964, when Dusty Springfield went to New York to perform on the Ed Sullivan Show, she found herself in a situation that prompted her to say, quote, "In all modesty, I am the only Dusty Springfield," end quote. She became one of the two most successful female British invasion artists. As a precaution to protect jobs available to United States citizens, the H-1 and H-2 visas are fair. But when the job position is cultural, an American worker or a musician cannot provide the same service that an international worker can provide. Because of this cross-pollination of cultural nuances, it is impossible for domestic musicians to do the same job as foreign workers. The mere $750 Sandy Shaw was offered for a performance is superficial in the broader context of what foreign talent can do for society. Along with the performance, Foreign performers are adding a new dimension to American culture that it otherwise would not get. By manipulating the labor law to fulfill their own agenda, unions such as the American Federation of Musicians were preventing the growth of America's cosmopolitan culture. Thank you.
Splendid talk. So, questions, Carolyn?
Yes.
I wonder if a part of this is the Spanish of them from her performance practice. I remember with her documentary, seeing her music video, and she would perform about shoes. She performed very quickly. And it kind of comes across as very non-conformist. So I'm wondering if that might have been a part of the issue that the Federation who was on the American side of the flag, coupled with the fact that her manager was female also.
I know that in the 5-page petition decision that they did mention performing barefooted because the petition that was submitted, which is just a bunch of materials that say here's why she's special, and they're reviewed by the musicians union or whatever federations, you know, and they trivialized the fact that they're was an emphasis on the fact that she performed barefooted. So there were other visa petitions that she submitted. I'm sure that they're available in the National Archives, and I think the answer would lie there. If they consistently mention it, I don't know. But yeah, so thanks for the question. the petition actually would be it would be put together by the production company who wants you, who's hiring you. So it would be in this case the American company. So, but I think that her manager is the only female manager in the UK that I came across at that time. But I'm not sure. I might be wrong about that. But.
Thanks for that. As you probably know, there's a bigger picture here between 1975 and 1954, the UK,
right, yes.
My question is how much this relates to the fact that Sandy Shaw was a singer? Because in the UK, singers could get in, but musicians couldn't.
I think that the fact that she was a singer further trivialized her career and her importance because most of the British Invasion people were bands. They all played musicians or were the front man for a band, with the exception of Tom Jones. So, but he was an adult. He looked like he was a man. He didn't look like a little girl. So there's age, there's gender, there's genre. I think that the genre is very important. I don't know exactly. It's tough because there weren't as many singers. So unless I would love to be able to look at all the petitions that were submitted to see how many unknown singers were trying to get in and how many were rejected. And I think that the answer would be there. But again, I'd need to go to the National Archives, which I would love to. But.
You mentioned that those three factors, you know, age and related experience, genre, and gender. And in the examples you showed, they actually work with being quite explicit in genre and in age and experience. I'm curious if you've come across any statements in those decisions that make the gender one a little more explicit.
Not so much, no. It's just the respectability that, in contrast to Anthony Newley's document, and Sandy Shaw's document. Because if you read the whole thing, Sandy Shaw's document is basically, you're not good enough, you're not good enough, you're not good enough, you're not good enough. And Anthony Newley's is, oh, we can just let him in. He's the kind of person that would respectability. We want him here. So his name speaks for him instead of having a petition document speak for Sandy Shaw. So. Yeah.
His application. So was there, I mean, obviously, if, Sandy Shaw is performing on Shindig, I mean, there's clear reasons why I can imagine that it's being a really likely fit. Is there also, are we getting back to the distinction between television and live performance again, or do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I know that the petition decisions, they would decide what type of venue you can perform. With the example of Wayne Fontana, when he was able to perform on television but not in live venues. I don't know why they would decide that or how that assessment would take place, but at the same time, they would need to be asked to perform on television. They would have had to been asked to perform in a specific venue. So I suppose it could have something to do with the requests, the demand. I know that the fact that the Anthony Newley document really keyed in on the fact that Password is of distinguished merit and ability itself really demonstrates how they view that type of television program. And I think also contrasts how Sandy Shaw was treated and how she was rejected. So, and a lot of it has to do with the language. I can send you both of the documents if you want. They're all online, which is interesting. But not enough of them are online, so.
I just want to say, though, I mean, if the visas are saying that it's that the worker has to be, of a specific, need for the United States, I mean, anybody can be on Password. It doesn't have to be Anthony Newley. He's not filling a specific need. So I think that's equally silly as what was done to Sandy Shaw.
Yeah, well, after I read that document, I looked at a list of people who performed on Password or who was a guest on Password, and it was all top classy people. So I suppose using that as an example for the reason why they would choose that. I mean, I think it was redundant because I think just saying his name is good enough would have been good enough. But they said, here's why, this is a great reason, building up on basically saying we're honored to have someone of such renown go on television in America. So. She performed on Shindig on television. I don't think she performed on stage in the States. And the reason why she never made it to the top 40 even on the pop charts was probably because Shindig isn't enough. Because there's a few other people where Shindig wasn't enough for them either. Had she made personal appearances, I mean, a personal appearance is more exciting to go to than turning the television on. So I don't think, and I know that in her autobiography, she doesn't mention America at all. So, yeah, and I think that I wouldn't if I was insulted. I mean, the document is insulting. It's horrible. So, I mean, at that point, I wouldn't even, if they begged me to go to America. It's like, no, sorry. I'm good enough now that I won the Eurovision contest. Well, I don't want to go anymore. I think if you're not wanted, and it's embarrassing too, I'm sure. I mean, it was published in newspapers, so, And I know she was very shy. So I can only imagine how what that would have done for her need to cross over into America.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks.